Hello and welcome to your weekly roundup of all the latest news and ramble about the world of electric cars from the team at electrifying.com. No Ginny this week, the boys are in charge, so who knows what will happen. This week we're going to discuss the Mini Countryman, the Peugeot E3008, the return of buttons and the possible future of Fisker. I'm Mike Askew.
I'm Tom Barnard. You're saying, Mike, what will happen in this podcast with the boys in charge? I know what will happen. Our figures will plummet off because no one wants to watch us. But you know, please stay with us. We might be interesting. You never know.
And they'll be back next week. So don't worry. This is 1 week. You can just put up with us too. Yeah. So anyway, how are you, Tom? You all right?
I'm all right. Yeah, I've been trapped at my desk this week, but I've been digesting some of my news from Geneva and that sort of thing. You, I can tell, are at the barn, which is where we do our filming, which means you've had a long drive this morning. How was it? Did you have to stop? Did you make it all the way?
I made it all the way. I had a good 3-hour run. I live in Weymouth, which is lovely, but is totally impractical for this job, effectively. So where we film here at the barn is about 3 hours away. So, but it's good. I quite like a long drive. I mean, I've said that I'm not particularly looking forward to the three hour journey home. But you learn a lot about a car, don't you? Just sitting there and messing around with the regen buttons and the kind of thing, and seeing what makes a difference to the various different modes and everything. So it's a kind of rare treat that we kind of get with this job, because often if we're on a launch, we have an hour to drive a car and we need to do filming or do photography or something like that. So it's not always a luxury that you tend to get. So I really don't mind sitting there with the radio on, having to play with all the kit. It's really nice.
Podcasts, so, Mike, surely podcasts. You listen to podcasts.
And you listen to our own, Tom.
Are there others?
There are no others to listen to. I'd have to listen to it 6 times, though, if I was going to have a 3-hour journey. Not even I could put up with that. But we're here at the barn today. We've got a very interesting triple test. I mean, all our tests are interesting, but this is particularly interesting. We've got an MG4 extended range. We've got a Renault Megane, which is the E-Tech, which is the one I bought today. And we also have the Jeep Avenger. Three cars around similar kind of prices, similar performance, similar range, not exactly the same, but within the sort of same ballpark. But they're all kind of three different packages. So you've got the Avenger as your SUV, which a lot of people are a bit fed up with now, with SUVs, big and boxy. You've got the old school hatchback in the MG4, which is kind of like the traditional form. And you've got that kind of in between. The Megane's kind of fish or fowl, is it? It's kind of in between. It's slightly kind of taller than a normal hatch, but not quite what you wouldn't look at it and think that's an SUV. So it's an interesting comparison, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I was looking at in the meeting that where we decided this, and we're kind of playing around with the sliders on the website to see what the price of things is. And it's like, my God, these are all the same sort of money, because I think of that MG4 being a 26 grand, being quite a cheap car. But with that bigger battery, it has 323 miles, I think, of range. Yeah. And it's suddenly up to 36 grand, I think. And then the top level of the Jeep, which again, I think of being like a super mini, is the same sort of money, 38, I think, grand. And then you've got the Megane, which I always thought of as quite an expensive car. But actually, now I think they've adjusted the prices down a bit, and it seems like pretty good value to me, especially compared to those. I think it's a bit more polished. I think, I mean, Nicola's doing the test, so I won't leave it up to her, but I know which one I'd have. The Jeep's great fun, but you'd get annoyed on a long journey, wouldn't you? The MG, I don't know. There's just some things where there's a bit of cost saving on the MG, I think.
I think the MG works better. I don't want to spoil any surprise. I think it works better as a cheaper car, doesn't it? Mm. I think it's one of those cars where if you're kind of at the higher end, you start to think, well, I'm not sure I can forgive those plastics or that road noise or whatever. You know, there are a few things that kind of, the Megane, when I drove it this morning, I thought, yeah, it does feel nice. It does have a kind of quality to it, and the materials and everything and the soundproofing, it just feels like a really good quality product. So, but as I say, Nicola's driven them all today. She's driven them back to back. She's had a look at the figures, so we'll let the final verdict be hers. We shall see that. We've got a couple of videos go up live on the site since we last did the podcast. We've had Ginny's driven both of them, actually, the Mini Countryman and the Peugeot E3008. Now, the Countryman's quite interesting, isn't it? Because the week before, she'd driven the BMW iX2, and we can't really sugarcoat this, really. She hated it, didn't she? She really didn't enjoy it at all. There was lots of things she didn't really like about it. It didn't really feel very BMW-y, and it was expensive, and the ride wasn't great and everything. Mini Countryman, she's come back delighted, hasn't she? She really liked it.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's almost as though like the BMW engineers went out for their Christmas party or something, and the Mini engineers came in and like undid some bolts or something. It's bizarre because it's exactly the same battery, the motors and everything, but the Mini just apparently seems to drive so much better. I think also, you know, the Mini has a bit of character, and you expect a Mini, even if it's the size of a Qashqai like that car is, to have that kind of darty steering and to feel sporty and fun as soon as you get into it. And the BMW, they just seem to have, I don't know, they've done something strange. Maybe they're not used to sort of doing chassis like that and want to do their own bespoke rear-wheel drive, whatever it is. But she just said it didn't ride very well and didn't steer very well. It wasn't that efficient. Mm. It's expensive. And the looks are challenging. I think that's an easy way to say. I think BMW, they do sometimes push the boundaries of styling, and after a few years we either get used to it or go, oh, maybe they were right. I think that, you know, the Z4 Roadster was controversial when it came out. I think it looks great now, but I'm not sure that's ever going to look great. Maybe I'll be proved wrong. Maybe we'll come back in 10 years or something and still be wittering on and saying, oh, you were wrong about that iX2, Tom.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if you watch the video, or if you look at the pictures, or look at the review on our site, and you think, actually, you boys are completely barking up the wrong tree, I love it. Please let us know in the comments below, because we like a different opinion, and we're not always right. In fact, we're hardly ever right. But be interesting to know if the iX2 presses your buttons, and if you'd rather have one of those than a Countryman, please let us know. We always like to hear. And the E3008 as well, which for the uninitiated has got a largest family SUV. It's the first one, I believe, that's on the kind of what they call the Stellar platform, isn't it? It's the sort of more bespoke electric platform that the Stellantis have. Ginny's had a drive of that. 74 kilowatt hour battery in the launch one, which I think has got 300 and something miles of range. But there's 430 miles of range with the bigger battery one, and that's a 98 kilowatt hour battery. And that's huge, isn't it? I mean, that's, but that's, you know, if that is what it's going to take to get people to think, well, you know, I'm going to put my family in a car that's going to be able to do at least, let's say, shall we say, 350 miles of real world range. Yeah, that might be what persuades some people that that they're going to change. You know, they might not actually need that amount of range, but they might need the reassurance of having that figure on it.
Well, Ginny sent me a slide. She was in the press conference when that car was being launched, and she took a picture on her phone and sent it to me. That was quite interesting. I don't know if you got it as well, Mike, but it was kind of the rival cars to that and showing what they called a typical journey, which was from kind of Paris to Nice, and saying in their car you'd have to stop for this amount of times over that journey, and in rivals you'd have to stop this amount of times, and therefore their car, you'll be spending, I don't know what it was, a couple of hours less on that journey because of the efficiency, because of the size of the battery and the speed it charges at, which is a really interesting idea and probably an interesting sales point as well. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe you do that journey once or twice a year. Is that a reason enough to buy a car saving an hour? I don't know, but it's an interesting thought that people might want that kind of combination of efficiency and speed of charging.
It's weird, isn't it? I think that when you talk to people who haven't bought an electric car or haven't driven it, it's that obsession of not being able to go far enough. I've got neighbors who ask me about buying, I'm sure you get this all the time. You become the kind of go-to person to ask about cars, even though they know what they want. I think they just want a bit of reassurance. But I had some neighbors who are very keen to go electric, ended up buying a Volkswagen Tiguan, non-hybrid or anything. They ended up buying a petrol car. And I said, you know, they just potter around town in general. They don't do a lot. But they did say, I don't think electric's going to work for me, because we go to Coventry every Christmas. And that was kind of, I'd sort of said, well, you know, that A, that's once a year, and B, you could get there and a good chunk of the way back without having to charge. But they're in their 70s. They don't really fancy, you know, charging in public. They've read the horror stories. They haven't quite seen the reality of it. But it's strange, isn't it? That's one decision, one journey that they make once a year, and it's enough to kind of put people off it completely. So, but yeah. Maybe you do need those longer range cars to kind of persuade people that they it's fine to change. You know, it's cool to stop. You know, it's getting better all the time.
Yeah, I think it is. I think I've got a big journey coming up next week, and I haven't researched it. I'm not panicking about it. I'm not thinking it's going to be a great adventure. I'm just thinking, oh, I'll probably have to charge once on the way there and maybe once on the way back. And I know it won't be an issue. I'll just have to do a little bit of planning, but not like before in the first days when I started driving electric cars, what, 11 years ago, when it was a bit of a mission. It felt like a proper adventure going on a journey that was longer than to, you know, Heathrow.
Yeah. I mean, I would have done this journey 4 years ago, mostly on the A34. And there was one charger at the services. And it was great because it always worked. And I was about the only person who had an electric car then. So there was never anyone using it. So it's fine. But now you kind of, when I look on ZapMap for that journey that I drive home tonight, and I do the filter of, you know, the kind of three or more chargers, and it still lights up like a Christmas tree. There's so many hubs now that, you know, there's Cheevy services, which I think got 14 or 15 ultra rapid chargers now. And every time I look, every time I do the journey, we might have to come here once a month. There's another, and not just one or two going in. It's kind of proper big hubs, isn't it? So it is getting better.
And also I found myself getting snooty. So it's like, I'm not going to put up with a 50 kilowatt. I want at least 300. Otherwise I'm not going to grace their forecourt.
You almost get to the point where you filter those out of the search. Yeah, because you kind of think, you know, you're going to be that posh. Should we go back to MG? While we're on the subject,
you saw some
in Geneva.
Yeah, we ran out of time last week to talk about it, but when I was in Geneva, the MG stand was huge, and so I looked at it and had to find someone from MG to talk me through it, because there were all these cars, an MG7 and an MG9. I'm like, well, what's going on? They said, oh, they're just China market at the moment. And I said, is there a chance they'll come to the UK? And they said, well, no, not really, but come this way, sir. And they took me to the other side of the stand, where they had a badge saying IM, Intelligent Mobility. Yeah. Now, I reckon, this is my prediction, they're going to have to rename it, because Intelligent Mobility is, first of all, a Nissan.
Nissan's, yeah. See it on all the others.
A Nissan catchphrase or something. And also, IM is the name of the company that imports Auras and Isuzus and Subarus and some other stuff, I think. So I think there's some solicitors' letters flying about, and they're going to have to change that. But the cars themselves, there was a complete range of what we would call Tesla rivals, I suppose. So there was a big saloon, which is kind of Model S sized, and then two SUVs, one Model Y and one Model X. And then they unveiled this car, which was the L6, which is Model 3 sized. And kind of looks like, you know, it's not an ugly car, but it's just one of those kind of generic cars that looks like all the others, I suppose, if I was being slightly unkind. It's got some impressive figures. So 800 volt charging is the norm on some of the electric cars at the moment, because you're very fast. They've got 875 volt charging, which is like 370 kilowatts it will take at a rapid charger, if you can find one that powerful. And they say it'll have solid state batteries that will give you a 500 mile plus range. So, wow. Who knows? Interesting. And they're coming. They say it's coming next year. So
next year?
Yeah, next year, yeah. And, you know, with MG, they don't mess about, do they? And these Chinese manufacturers. So, it's let's wait and see.
Blimey. Well, one of the things that caught my eye this week in the news was one of our old friends, one of our old brands, Fisker, which seems to be the painful growth of startups is very evident. And Fisker this week or last week had said that, Henrik Fisker said that they didn't have enough money to carry on as a going concern without some significant investment. And from what we gather from a story in Reuters over the weekend, that Nissan are sort of poised to pump £315 million, so the story goes, into Fisker to keep it going, in return for access to building the Alaska, or the Kayak, as it's going to be known in Europe, pickup truck, because I don't think Nissan are particularly far with their own pickup truck. And it sounds minimal to us, but in North America, the pickup market is huge, isn't it?
The best-selling vehicles are pickups in America, aren't they?
Exactly. So it's hard to underestimate how much of that is. And Tesla seem to have, you know, they've got the Cybertruck, which is more of a kind of passion project than reality, isn't it, in terms of big sales. Ford are doing okay with the Lightning, aren't they? But it's not a huge seller. But potentially that could help Fisker out. But I mean, they lost 365 million last year, and that's with selling cars, you know, admittedly only the end of the year. So I mean, it'd be a shame to see them disappear. So maybe this kind of tie up with Nissan will be beneficial to both parties.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of Fiskers out on the road, actually, and I've been like, oh, what's that? You know, you do a double take when you haven't seen a car before and you're not quite sure what it is.
Yeah,
I don't know if they've been like demonstrators or what it is, but I don't know if customers have got them. If you are a Fisker owner, please let us know and tell us what it's like. We're fascinated, genuinely. I had a poke around those cars, the Ocean and the Pear and the Kayak, when I went to the Munich Motor Show. And they're really interesting cars. I wouldn't say that I particularly want to own one for various reasons, but I think they're fascinating and perhaps they'll go down well in some places. Some interesting features on them, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it'll be a real shame, but I think all those American brands are really struggling, aren't they? Lucid and Rivian are both not without their problems financially.
And Apple have pulled out as well. Who'd have thought it's difficult to make cars? I mean, this is the thing about all these new brands coming in and analysts saying, "Oh, the legacy brands are dead." And sure, they're taking their time to make these electric cars, but perhaps they're taking their time because they need to get it right and need to make sure that they're making money. And I think there's going to be a great deal of fallout, isn't there?
I think there is, and you know, because you know, I've worked in the industry for long enough. You know, the actual car and the launcher is kind of the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? The amount that goes on underneath, the kind of 2 years of cold weather testing, hot weather testing, building the factory, getting the factory to work, and all that kind of stuff. The actual building the car bit is, in some respects, the easy bit. It's all the kind of stuff you have, the regulatory stuff you have to go through, the crash testing, all that stuff, all that cost of those has to be factored into the cost of the car. And if you're not selling a lot, you have to divide all that cost into a small number. So that's why it's so hard to do. And Fiskers, you know, they are priced really competitively. If you look at the specs, you know, for like, they are, you know, astonishing, really. I kind of hope, from the sake of diversity, the fact that we have different cars to choose from, that Fisker survives. So we'll wait and see. I don't think this deal with Nissan is signed or sealed yet, and I guess there's quite a bit of due diligence to do on both sides. But who knows? If you would like, you know, if you think this is a good idea, let us know in the comments below. Always lovely to hear from you, especially about Fisker. Always tends to generate plenty of interest. So that's that. And the other thing we found out this week about buttons might be making a comeback, Tom.
Oh, yeah. So I think this will get people shouting at their screens or their speakers in relief, because, you know, you get into a modern car and there are increasingly, they've got rid of the buttons and it's all on the touchscreen. And there are good reasons for that. It saves a fortune and it means you can change it to tailor it to your particular taste. But Euro NCAP, who are the independent organisation that crashes cars and then gives a safety rating on them, has realised that this perhaps is a bit of a safety issue. And we don't want to be stabbing screens in the middle of the dashboard to turn on the windscreen wipers if you suddenly drive through a puddle or if it's suddenly foggy. So they are going to start penalising companies who put safety-related buttons into the screen, or maybe get rid of stalks like Tesla. So all these companies who currently have 5 stars will start to get 4 stars, and that will hurt them, I think. So about bloody time is all I can say.
Well, there's a certain irony to that statement, isn't there? Because most of us spend our time, the first time you drive the car, to spend 5 minutes going through the menus to turn off lane keep assist, which is of course a Euro NCAP requirement. So it's far more dangerous. Everybody,
half a mile
from your house is spent trying to find the button to turn the LKA off.
Euro NCAP recognize this as a fact that people hate them and just turn them off. So they are making another requirement that will score how usable they are. So I've got this Lexus RZ and the lane keep assist is actually fine. I never bother turning it off because I don't have a problem with it. It's not one that, you know, tugs you into the path of cyclists or anything like that. It's okay. But things like the speed alert systems and things, if it's not reliable, if it's saying that it's a 30 mile an hour limit and it's changed to 40 and there's a tree in front of the sign or something, that's when it gets irritating and they need to fix it. So Euro NCAP are going to start rewarding companies who make their safety systems good enough that you don't instantly get in and turn them off.
On that very subject this morning, I was about 10 miles into my journey in the Imogan, and I thought, well, this lane keep assist is really good because it's not pinging away, it's not trying to haul me back into lane everything. And I realized it was off by default. And I pressed the button. Mm-hmm. I pressed the button to double check. And it said, and I pressed the button, it came activated. It said activated, switch it off. Are you sure you want to deactivate it? Yes. I wasn't sure that was allowed. I thought it had to be on by default now. Or do you think that's from when the car was designed?
Yeah, or maybe it was when it was launched or something. So everyone's going to run out and buy old cars.
Because Tesla got away with not having the pedestrian noise thing on Model 3 for thick end of 3 years. I'm not even sure it still has it because it was launched like a month or so before it became a requirement. And of course, the requirement is, generally speaking, the point of manufacture rather than the actual point of sale, isn't it, for a lot of these systems? So, yeah, so I don't know if it was that. It was nice. It was a bit old school, really. Very pleasant.
Yeah,
it was good.
What else have you been up to, Mike?
Not much. I've been answering a lot of we've had a lot of queries and questions the last few weeks, actually.
Is your post bag bulging?
As always, yeah. And which has been good. We've had a few people. I firstly must apologise to Stephen Muddell, who was the mystery shopper you helped out last week. He was a mystery shopper because I forgot to put his name on the notes I gave to you. So he isn't a mystery. He wasn't trying to go under the shield of anonymity.
You could change his name by deed poll to mystery shopper. It'd make it much easier for us.
Yeah. Apologies, Stephen. I hope we were of use. And I know there were a lot of comments in the comments about your decision. So let us know what you've decided. We've got one this week from Gary Sanders. Hi, team. I'm currently in the market for a used EV, budget around £25,000. I've been looking at a used X-Demonstrator MGZS. So far, so good, right? But at the weekend, I saw a Tesla Model X near me for £24,000. Is it worth the risk? And your head's bowed. Is it worth the risk to get a car with more miles but a potentially longer range? Now, I don't know about you, but I mean, I looked up. The first thing I did when I saw that was start to look up used Model Xs. And sure enough, there are a handful under £25,000. I didn't find one that had less than 120,000 miles on it. So, Tom, if it was your money, would you sink that into a quite an old Tesla?
Yeah, I don't think I could sleep at night if I had an old Tesla on the drive. Unless, you know, it's from a dealer and you've got like a 2-year warranty or something that you're sure is cast iron and not, you know, printed on the back of a cornflake packet or something, because the potential for enormous bills is just too big, I think.
I'm one of those as well. That door mechanism. Can you imagine if that goes wrong? The cost would be involved in that.
I mean, maybe there are people out there who've got, you know, high mileage Tesla Model Xs and they're very happy with them and they've never had a problem. But I'm not sure I could do it. So there's a reason people buy new cars or newer cars, and that's because you've got the guarantee of it's going to be somebody's going to pick up the bill if something goes really badly wrong. But on a six-figure mileage Tesla, that's getting on a bit.
Yeah, the
Model X, I don't know, it's great fun and the kids loved it and loved the doors and things. But I just, do you remember, Mike? I think you were on that shoot where we're trying to get it through some width restrictions. It's just too, I needed somebody going like it was a plane at Heathrow. I think it's just too big for the UK. So
it's one of those cars that looks good in proportion. You think, okay, that's fine. And you get up close to it and you think your eyes have failed because it's this thing. You think, actually, this is absolutely enormous. And certainly a couple of the ones that were on for sale didn't have CCS. They just only had the Tesla plugs. Mm. How on earth they
Maybe they still got free charging, which you can... do you remember the early ones had free supercharging? And if they went back to Tesla, they quietly took that off. But if...
Has anybody still got an original like Model S with free supercharging? If you have, let us know. We'd love to know whether there's still... I mean, there must be fewer and fewer each year as if they get sold and traded back in. But
Elon's probably got people going around driving into them to write them off. Yeah, so he's not liable anymore. Some of those taxi drivers with like a million miles and free charging.
It's costing a fortune. It must be absolutely costing a fortune. We've got a Mythbuster as well this week, Tom. Mm-hmm. Martin Marks, who emailed us to the site info@electrifying.com if you have a question. He said, chatting to my local garage who look after my wife's MX-5. He mentioned that electric vehicle tyres are much more expensive because of the extra weight of the batteries and the requirement for superior rubber blends. This subject has yet to be aired as far as I'm aware. Yeah, I wouldn't always take everything a local garage says to you about electric cars for granted, really. I think there's a lot of misinformation, shall we say, Tom, about these sorts of things, because generally speaking, with one or two exceptions, my i3, for example, electric car tyres are normal tyres. Am I right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we put normal tyres on the Leaf. You have to make sure that they've got an XL rating, which is generally for heavier stuff like MPVs, because they are heavier. There's no doubt about it. Hmm. But I think QuickFit did a survey that said EV tyres don't wear out any faster than conventional ones. I think it might even have been slightly better. Hmm. There are certain cars, I think, that are come from the factory with special eco rubber on them.
Yeah.
Because I think it knocks, you know, or it adds a couple of miles to the range. So if you want to keep the range, then you could have those extra. But I don't think they're much more expensive unless they're a weird size. I think the thing with a lot of electric cars is that they are quite bling generally. So
they've got big wheels.
They've got 22-inch wheels. It's and that means they're expensive, but not any more than any other sort of Range Rover or SUV. I think you can spend a lot of money on the special rubber.
How much did you spend on tyres for the Leaf?
Well, I, because I'm tight, went for the Leaf, which had not the Techno. I went for an Ascenter because it had 16-inch wheels. I knew the tyres were half the price.
Yeah.
And we get through tyres not because they wear out, but because they get pothole damage. Around here, rural area, it's a nightmare. I think I put Michelins on it and they're what, 80, 90 quid each.
Yeah, I looked at, when I saw this this come in, I did look it up on our old friend Black Circles, which you and I have used quite a bit for tyres, and a Tesla Model 3 with, I think, 18-inch wheels. It was, if you're happy to have a cheap, really cheap, you've never heard of tyre, it was 65 quid delivered, you know, and you kind of think, and if you want the Michelins or you want the proper brand names, there were three figures, but not crazy. Figures. So yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, they do. I mean, the weight of the car means you may wear them out a little bit quicker, but generally there's not a massive, if that's scaring you off going electric, then perhaps, you know, just do the sums, work out the car you want to have a look at, and then work out what the tire size are. And plenty of these websites will tell you what tires will go on a car, and then it'll give you an idea of what the running costs will be like further on down the line.
I think there is an interesting thing they're talking about, my wheel size fetish, I suppose, is that I think when I was younger, the bigger wheels are much, much better and doesn't matter, they don't ride very well. And as I've matured, perhaps, is now I put the smallest wheels on the car because I know it's going to ride nicely and my tyres will be cheap. It's like, you look at these pictures of cars. I think BMW always used to do it on their press fleet cars, that the ones in the pictures would have like 20s and would look great. And the ones that they gave out for us to test would be on 15s because they knew it would ride much better. And that's what the engineer said was the best tyre.
On the Lotus Eletre launch that I went on, they said, the big thing about WLTP figure was this, that, and the other. Little asterisk. And, you always want to go to the bottom when you read that, you know, and it was said it was done on, the WLTP figure was achieved on 18-inch wheels, which didn't appear as standard on any of the cars. So the S or the R, none of them had that. So I asked the PR guy and he said, well, they're special order. So if you want those wheels, you can have them, we'll fit them. But they're not on the, I think they were on the configurator and I found them and it's like it's on roller skates. If you put this, you know, this massive car with this tiny little wheel, but that's what the WLT figure was achieved on. And by law, you have to make those wheels available to customers. I think it was a no cost option. Well, I'm not surprised. They were probably really cheap wheels, probably steels, but it was, so it's interesting to know that the small, I bet the ride quality was amazing on it. Great. Yeah. Sort of balloon tyres.
It kind of like adds like 20 miles to some cars. I think the Audi Q8, it was like 20 miles difference between the biggest and the smallest tyres. And you think, oh, well, yeah, I've got the one that looks best. But imagine being stuck 20 miles from home, running out of charge and thinking, why didn't I have
I should have had the smaller wheels. Cheaped out, exactly. we're probably over already, but I just wanted to say that the post bag was absolutely full of tributes to the Leaf, I'm going to say, because it was a sad day, wasn't it, last week when we heard that the Leaf was ending. And I don't think we didn't have this with the Zoe. When the Zoe went, there was tumbleweed. Nobody cared less. But the Leaf, oh my goodness, has really lit up the comments. I'm going to read a few out. Sally Barber says, I've got a Leaf at the moment. First EV I've had, and I've had it for over 3 years. I travel in the UK for work. It's not the best mile muncher, but it's so versatile. I tried a Peugeot E208, but didn't feel it. The Leaf just fits like a shoe. It's so annoying that Nissan didn't give it CCS before now, which I think is probably one of the reasons why it's lost its appeal with buyers. Ryan Henry says, I bought my 2017 Leaf named Maxwell. Love cars with names. 18 months ago as an import to Australia, Maxwell's done 96,000 kilometres in total and has 30% degradation after a less than careful previous owner completed more than 2,000 rapid charges on it.
So God.
It's a good job. It's still got 70% battery left, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Ryan still loves the fact that you can embarrass a Mustang or a Golf GTI at the traffic lights around town. So, and Paul Phillips says, I have a 21 plate Leaf Long Range, first electric car, made us love them. Going onto an Enyaq now. And that kind of in a nutshell is what's gone wrong, isn't it, really? I think because there was no natural progression. Aria's a great car, isn't it? But I don't suppose you get a lot of people moving on from a Leaf to an Aria. I think they're finding stuff that's in between, aren't they? So, I think it's sad. It was a lot of love for it.
Well, sort of segueing to my deal of the week, I suppose, is that I was just, keeping a close eye on what Leaf prices are doing, because after the announcement, they've stopped making it. They've got a lot in stock. And there's quite a few delivery mileage, but 73 plates, so the last plate. We're now on 24, aren't we?
Yeah.
Cars for sale on various websites, including our own.
Of course.
For £18,900. And they're 30 for the Techno, which is a 34,000 pound car, I think. £18,000. that's not bad, is it?
That's amazing. And that's for what? That's for new, is it?
Well, it's got like 5 miles on the clock.
Pre-reg cars.
Three months old. Yeah.
Wow.
That's quite tempting, I think.
Yeah. Let us know if you think that's a kind of appealing car. We'd love to know. Is it worth that? The fact that you're going to be paying probably at least £10,000 less than anything that's going to be comparable. Is it worth it? If you charge at home and you don't charge out, I mean, there's still going to be CHAdeMO around for years, isn't there, in rapid charging?
Yeah.
You probably won't have the choice, but it would probably be natural selection, I'd imagine, because there'll be so few CHAdeMO cars on. There's only two connectors in a bank of 10. That's probably works in your favour, because the chances are you're going to be able to get on them. So, again, let us know if you think that's going to be an 18 grand Leaf is going to be tempting to a lot of people. So, and I think that probably concludes the post bag for this week. It was mostly Leaf. It was one or two questions which we've answered before in terms of buying choices and tyres. So I think it's probably time to wrap up the podcast. Thank you for listening if you have been. We'll be welcoming back Ginny or Nicola next week, so you won't have to put up with us too. Have a good week. Bye.
Bye.